And hello, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, one and all. You are listening to Truth Warrior. And I'm your host tonight, once again, David Whitehead, and I am broadcasting live from Toronto, Canada. And today it is Monday, June the 30th. Tomorrow is Canada Day here in Canada, where we all suck up to the big central offshore megabanks that run our government here in the beautiful lands of Canada, as we lovingly referred to it on the recently done Modern Knowledge Tour, which we just recently completed. I'm back here, and I'm settling in nicely, and I'm back in my dojo tonight. I actually had to break into my own dojo tonight. No, it's kind of a joke. I came in, I'm getting all my equipment set up, and I totally forgot to put the alarm password on. So the alarm starts going off, and I got the guy calling in. He's like, you know, cease and desist, step away from the dojo. And I forgot the password, to my embarrassment. So, of course, I had to call my wife, find out what the password was, call the guy back, try not to get arrested, and then set up the show. But we're here. We're live. Always full of challenges. And tonight on the show, ladies and gentlemen, we have highly anticipated, long overdue, the return of the Man Talk Project. So I, of course, have two fellow truth warriors with me this evening. They're both well-known and world-renowned radio show hosts, bringing truth to the airwaves across the world. And of course, we are talking about the one and only Vinny Eastwood from the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. And we also have with us Randy Moggins from OffPlanetRadio.com. And I'm going to go ahead and welcome them on to the show. Guys, thanks for coming on to Truth Warrior again, doing another episode of the Man Talk Project. You're more than welcome. And you're live on the air.
I can't imagine anything better than having to break into your own business place to do your radio show. And wow, that's
he did it with ninja like stealth.
Well, apparently not, because I tripped the alarm wire. I didn't, you know, that move where all the lasers are coming in from different angles and you got to like do the duck roll and the cartwheel.
I'm picturing this.
I missed one of them. I missed my knee. It was my knee. It caught one of the things and whatever.
Well, you've got to refine the art of walking through walls.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. Undetected.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You got to Sun Tzu that stuff, man.
I got to just Sun Tzu my way through it, man. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, welcome, like guys. The Americans do it. They Sun Tzu for everything these days.
Oh, you know,
when he was introducing us before about these really famous, influential, you know, world-class radio shows, he was like, "Have you got a guest on that I haven't told me about?"
Really? Did we know about these guys?
You're the bee's knees, man. Come on, Vinny. How many YouTube subscribers you got now, man? It's great what you're doing.
Nearly 15,000. In fact, I've been trying to break the 15,000 mark for a long time, but every time I upload a new video, it pisses off several hundred people and they unsubscribe.
That's how it is, man. You can't, you can't please everybody. But no, both you guys, stellar guys. I missed you guys. It's been a while, and hope everything's been going well. Randy, how have things been going in your neck of the woods there?
It's done pretty well. This has actually been a slack time for me. I have taken several months off. I'm working in the background on some projects, and we're launching new websites. So a lot of that, because I do all that work, has taken up a lot of time. But getting ready to launch out onto some new shows, and we'll be back to live radio in the fall.
Awesome. How about you, Vinny? What's been new? I mean, you've been doing all kinds of great – I actually want to talk to you about your Jordan Maxwell interview, but you've been doing a lot of work lately.
Well, I wouldn't say I've been doing a lot of work. I've been getting a lot of content out there, but, you know, it's not really that hard. So Jordan Maxwell, eh? I had a scheduled interview with him, and with Max Egan. You know, it was like playing music with my mate, and I was thinking, you know, I had all these people telling me to get Max Egan on and telling me to get Jordan Maxwell on, and I thought, you know, it would be really awesome, both of them on at the same time for 2 hours. That would be great. Jordan, Max Egan. Yeah. But it didn't turn out too well because Jordan was supposed to have all his Comrex box and microphone, professional studio staff, 11 hard drives worth of 54 years of research, and his computers and laptop and clothes, memorabilia items, things he's doing, about to be delivered that morning before our interview. But that morning, the warehouse that everything was in, a fire started and
down.
Everything was gone.
Yes.
Unreal, man.
And
unreal.
I was like, I see an old man, 74 years old, you know, one of these elders, and I see him in a tough spot, because I could just think about me at 29 years old with still a hell of a lot of kick left in me, losing all my equipment and all my years of work already, and how badly that would devastate me. So I thought, how can I help this man, considering we only have like a few minutes before his Skype connection kicks out? And so I quickly interview him for about 7 minutes and ask for some donations and support on his behalf. I mean, to get yourself back on top, at least be able to function in the Truth Movement in any kind of talk radio capacity or website facilitating, you need at least like a laptop and a microphone and a pair of headphones, at the least. And that's like actually not as easy as it sounds. That's near on $5,000 if you're going to do it right. So, you know, it's just asking for help from the public, from one of my elders, and I get all of these people posting all these abusive, horrific comments and things of that nature. It's just disgusting, you know. Like, imagine if you were 74 years old and the last 50-something years of your research just burned up and you have people trying to kick you while you're down.
What were they saying, man? Were they just pissed off that, you know?
Oh, no, they're basically just like, ha-ha, he deserved it.
They're haters, basically. He's got a strong hater following.
Well, when you've been in this field for that long, I'm sure you're going to generate a few people that are either jealous of you or just don't like what you say or don't like the way you say it. I mean, come on, we all go through this on one level or another, and I don't think there's a researcher in this field that hasn't been ripped apart by some online bloggers or YouTube commenters.
And here's the problem. It turns us into soundboard warriors who just get abused, and then we talk about ourselves getting abused, and then talk about how that makes us feel, and then we forget about the news. And that's the idea. That's the intention behind it. So, with those people, block, and they're never seen again. Block, and the scum is gone.
Awesome. Did you have a website or anything set up for helping with donations that we can mention to my listeners here? Because my listeners here, they're not going to write in and abuse us in that way. So
do not go to jordanmaxwell.com. Because that was
stolen. Go to jordanmaxwellradio.com.
jordanmaxwellshow.com.
Show.
Ah.
See, Vinny's got the skinny.
Oh, you just reminded me of it there. I was just trying to remember the difference between them.
Well, but, because unbeknownst to either one of us, I had been contacting Jordan as well for a future appearance. And in the same time period that he was scheduled to come on your show, I was corresponding with him. And when I saw I actually saw news come across Facebook about the burning of his warehouse. So it's really, wow.
Well, you know, your heart's got to go out to somebody. I mean, regardless of what somebody says about you, or let's say worst case scenario, he's like some kind of a badass insider, et cetera, et cetera. The man's 74 years old and all his worldly possessions just burned to the ground. Okay? That in and of itself, I think, entitles you to at least give the guy a little bit of empathy.
Oh, man. I've known Jordan's work for a long time. I've interviewed him about 3 times. I was trying to get him back on the show, and I'll just say that anybody out there that has even an idea of this realm of information owes a huge debt of gratitude to somebody like Jordan for the work that he's done. And all of these people that have come out and put their life on the line and put their reputation on the line have all been labeled insiders of one sort or another. And what you just have to do is listen to the man's work and listen to whether or not the story is changing. You can judge by his integrity. You can talk to the people that really know him. They're not just people that listen to an interview and then form an opinion and then have to spew their crap all over the media or the social media. And I just think that it's just it's been one thing after another for Jordan. I know that. And it's just horrific to see that this is what's actually taking place. I mean, that's brutal.
Well, people need to understand the very important difference between free thinking and talking without thinking.
One of the sad things is the truth movement tends to eat its own over a certain period of time. It's strangest thing in the world to watch how you can be a rock star one day and then you're trampled under the feet of the crowds as they run off to the next circus tent in search of their next vicarious thrill. I've watched this for years. I mean, and I'm sure, David, you're aware as well that Michael Tesarian also suffered those same indignities for periods of time.
Well, yeah, I had I work actually closely with Michael. We had him up as part of the Modern Knowledge Tour. We're doing like a whole bunch of projects. We're going to be the first. We're going to bring him to Canada, actually, and we're working on that. And I don't know. I don't care what anybody says about him. The man is a stand-up man. He's the real deal. I've spoken to him, you know, off air many, many times, and I've gotten to know him quite well. And I've also read every book he's written, watched every interview he's done, watched all of his documentary films. And it's funny because the people that go out and attack these people are extremely uneducated about the real points that these guys make and haven't really educated themselves about their work. So I think that what happens, it's like anything, whether it's the mainstream or the alternative community, you have people that they just need to take it out on somebody. And it's easy if you're out there and you've put yourself out there, you become an easy target, and it becomes a way that people can vent and they can express their own inner garbage through making fun of you or pointing fingers at you or putting the blame onto you. When we, like Vinny was saying, we should all be uniting and realizing that we're all in this together. We're all fighting the same forces here. We all want, you know, peace, freedom, harmony, and all that good stuff. And these are just people that have done a lot of incredible research, and we should listen to them, take it and bring it forward, update it and add our own opinion, not just sit there and chop people down. But I mean, hey, that's just my opinion.
Well, can I say something here? Because my mother had a saying, is it called a nine-fingered point? So for every finger you point at somebody else, you've got like nine pointed back at you. And a lot of these people that are commenting on the YouTube sections and on Facebook and all of that kind of stuff, they're like vampires. They can't see themselves in the mirror. You know? I mean, just think about it. Just if you've ever been so full of vitriol and hate and spit and vile disgust, daughtered scumbaggery and BS in your own mind, that you'd write some of the comments these people write and then think to yourself, you know, if I'd just written that and posted it and then looked at it and go, man, I look like a troll and a scumbag. You know, there's no pause for self-reflection for these people. It reminds me of a time me and my wife were driving along the road the other day. We saw these four youths with hoodies over their heads and fitted starter caps or something like that, low down in a mean machine made in Japan or something like that, with gangster rap music blaring out as loud as it could possibly go. And I turn to my wife and I say, I wonder if these guys actually realize that they're a cliche. And the answer is, of course they don't. Because you don't become a cliche by self-analysis. You become a cliche by mindlessly doing whatever the program tells you to do, whether it's pop culture or the medical industry, whatever. Stop being a cliche and a douchebag. Be original for once in your life. Stop going out there and watching other people's content and basing your life on it and thinking you have a relationship with these people that you see on the radio and the YouTube channels just because you've had a few messages or contact with them or something like that. We're not your best friend. We don't have relationships with you. This radio platform, this TV platform, it isn't real. You are real. And the people in your life are real, but don't think that we are the most important part of your life.
Exactly.
And you know what's amazing, what you just said there, and I've experienced this before, is the obsessiveness that people have. You will attract stalkers, you will attract haters, and you will attract people who put you in a situation where they're just morally offended by some action or something that you've spoken. acting human, and what you just pointed out there goes back to people like Jordan Maxwell. What level of deity does one have to attain in order to be acceptable to the public? Because it certainly hasn't worked out well for the skanking politicians.
I think it's actually worked out remarkably well because they keep getting reelected with a 9% approval rating.
Well, that's what they tell us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's basically, it works like this. It's a hell of a lot easier to forge a reputation based on lies because you can forget the lies you told people and they'll look into it and say, hey, this thing doesn't work out. And then you can just lie to cover it up. It's beautiful. It works perfectly because people don't want to follow a track record. They want to vote based on emotion and what is put in front of them right there and there. It at the time, like a reptilian brain response, you know? You ever said something or done something and you thought to yourself, you know, had I taken a few breaths and calmed down for 10 seconds, would I have done or said the same thing? No, I wouldn't, because it's your fight or flight mode taken over. And that's what they try to do. They try to get into this crisis mode. Oh my God, World War III is coming. The financial collapse is coming. Grab your guns, grab your storable foods, grab your storable water. There's not entirely any element of truth in that I necessarily disagree with. What I disagree with is the constant repetition of it constantly. Every single day. Warning you about crap that's about to happen. I don't watch the news anymore because I've realized something. And I also don't listen to radio shows that are talking about up-to-dates and say, we've got breaking news here or something like that. I don't do it anymore. Why? Because it gives me an air of anxiety, a constant, unending, slow, steady stream of adrenaline making me ever more aggressive and ever more anxious. And I realized that the conditions inherent in that state of being will actually kill me faster than the things that they're warning me about.
It's a good point. And I mean, also in regards to these trolls and these people, even within the so-called alternative or truth movement or whatever you want to say, there's elements there that actually demonstrate a bigger lesson, in my opinion, in regards to this information, is that it's one thing to realize that you're being lied to by your government officials and that, of course, yes, all kinds of nefarious activity takes place and there's wars and there's bank corrupt or financial corruption and there's false flag terror events. That's one level of it. But if that's all you're investing your time into and you're not investing into the real point to all of this, which is to obviously deal with your own skeletons in your own closet and go in and wade through all the filth that you have to deal with within your own psyche and deal with that, because that's something you can do. That's change you can make right away. They're missing the point. And then they end up taking all the frustration and all that negativity out on the people that are out there shining a light. And they also aren't the people that are out there doing the work. Very often it's the people that are just sitting on the side. They've watched all these videos and they think they're now educated and they think that they're in a position where they can actually make a legitimate comment on any of these things. But truth is, they're cowards. I mean, they've got this information, but they're doing nothing with it and they're just spreading.
Knowledge is no substitute for experience.
Exactly. And you've got, and the experience that you need is also about dealing with your own emotional and you know, psychological makeup. You have to deal with that. And I think that's what all this stuff going on in the world is actually pointing us to. I mean, if you look at the planet like a living being, and it's got its cells and its various makeup, like just like your own body has its own cells, its own makeup. It's expressing an extreme amount of toxicity right now, and that. If you were to look at it on an individual basis, if your body started showing signs of disease and sickness, then it would be a sign that you need to go and look at it and deal with it in order to obviously prevent, you know, the disease from taking over and shutting you down. And on a collective level, there is that collective garbage dump that's out there. And we keep tapping in and adding to it if we're only looking at the problem. And we do need to look at the problem. It has to be balanced. But if you're only looking at that on a superficial level and you're not taking the lesson that, okay, well, if this is happening collectively, what can I do individually to stop adding to this collective toxic waste dump? And then once you can start cleansing your own mind, your own being, then you're now already causing a greater effect than just going out and spewing a bunch of fear and negative garbage, right? So I think it's about a balanced approach. And I think if people are just out there talking about the next big thing that's going to wipe out the human race or whatever only, and they're just spewing all this garbage, well, then they're missing the point, in my opinion.
Yeah. It was kind of like I just came up with a joke when you're doing that, white blood cells, they attack disease and they attack viruses. Are white blood cells racist?
Are they racist? Well, they're racist.
And again, this goes into the whole point about missing the point. It's like this actually happens. No kidding. I've got in my bio talking about the two different types of propaganda as defined by Edward Bernays in the book Propaganda, all right, called Black Propaganda and White Propaganda. Black propaganda is when you use lies to convince somebody of your point of view, and white propaganda is when you use the truth to convince somebody of the truth. And they said that, oh, isn't that a bit racist, calling it black propaganda saying it's bad and white propaganda saying it's good?
Well,
it's like, Bernays, are you freaking retarded?
Bernays blended both of them, so I guess you could say it was gray propaganda. So now we're racist against the grays too, huh?
And against the grapes.
Yes.
The grape propaganda.
Yeah. No, missing the point is pretty much the state of, the majority of people that actually start out. I mean, I remember like that. I'm sure all of us remember when we first started opening our eyes to these different things and asking these questions and going on this whole, journey. There's those moments where you think you know something, and then you start doing some more research, you start looking around a little bit more, and you realize, oh, I was missing something from my previous analysis. And then you update it and you go, okay, well, then now I know that. And because you're seeking it honestly. I think a lot of people aren't really seeking it honestly. And they just want to, be the one that's winning the argument, and they just want to be the one that's ahead of everybody else. And it becomes an ego thing. And I think that happens to a lot of people, especially in this arena.
I think that stems from a fear of being wrong. Personally, I act under the broad-based assumption that I'm wrong about pretty much everything. And so that way, if I'm ever proven wrong, it's proven me right. And if I am actually wrong, which meaning I'm actually correct in the first place, then I'm correct anyway. So this way, you never fear somebody revealing a piece of information that contradicts something that you've previously spouted. Because then I can just go, okay, and let's change the direction on a dime and go, okay, you've produced the evidence. I very much apologize for my previous spreading of things that weren't necessarily true. I wasn't lying to you. I was just being honest. You've got to do your own research as well as I do. And sometimes, if you find out that you're wrong, you actually have to say so, because otherwise people go through their entire life thinking that what you said was correct.
Exactly. And that's the other thing. When people put you or anybody else on a pedestal above them, because they're like, oh, that's going to be the guy I'm going to listen to. I'm going to follow every word he says and everything he does. And that's what's going to happen. And then all it's going to take is one thing that person does. And suddenly you're going to feel flooded with disappointment. And you're going to start, now going through this process of having to understand, who and what you are and make your own mind up. And that's difficult for people to do, because instinctively we want somebody to do the work for us, to tell us what the answers are, to tell us what we should be doing, instead of actually going on that journey ourselves. So I think what we need to do at this stage, if I could speak in general here, is that each person needs to find out what they can actually contribute to this, not about what's that guy doing over there and what's that guy doing over there and why did that guy say that and why did this guy report this and why did that. Forget about all that. We're done being in kindergarten, I think. We should all start to evolve this conversation and start asking, get out of the drama and start asking, what can I do to contribute? What's my skill set? Where's my knowledge base? How can I be of service here? Instead of just cutting down other people that, or even just falsely projecting all of the answers and hopes and dreams on other people. And with that, guys, we're going to break. And welcome back, folks. You're listening to Truth Warrior. And as always, we're broadcasting live from truthfrequencyradio.com. And tonight, we have the Man Talk Project underway. I've got my fellow radio talk show hosts. Try to say that 10 times fast. Vinny Eastwood, from the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, and of course Randy Moggins from OffPlanetRadio.com. Welcome back, gentlemen, and I'm so glad we were able to get another episode of the Man Talk Project underway here.
Yeah, it was my fault, actually. It was supposed to be on my show. I don't really have a network at the moment, so I'm not quite so much as a talk radio show host as I am a talk radio parasite.
Beautiful. Yeah, but that makes two of us, actually. I don't think having a network makes you a talk show host. On the other hand, you know, what does make you a talk show host is doing the work, which goes back to what we were talking about when we broke away. The idea that we have a lot of people out here that are information junkies, and that's good. People need to be educated. They need to get facts. They should watch videos, listen to shows, go to conferences when they can. But they also need to start to implement what they learn. And until you're ready to go out there and take some of your head knowledge and apply it, you're really a parasite in the sense that you're sucking down knowledge and you're not applying it. I've been pushing people for a while now in my own sphere to do simple things because they're like, how do you challenge authority? How do you challenge the government? How do you stand down the military? And I'm going, well, here's an idea. The next time you get a ticket, go to court. Well, how does that help? Because it makes you stronger. Because once you go to court, and even if you lose, you've now tested your theories in the real world, and you've gone out there and put the powers that be on notice that you're not going to be a shrinking violet anymore. You're not going to sit by and let the state tell you what you can and cannot do without challenging them. And that's what people have to do. It's a very simple thing. It's a progression. The more you do this, the more you build momentum in going forward and taking on the larger issues in every level of life.
See, in that way, I'm different, in which case I act like a conduit to allow people to know that that kind of stuff is going on and get into it if they wish to. So in essence, my listeners and my guests are often a lot stronger than I am in some respects. And I'm just kind of like the man behind the curtain who just sits here, interviews them, and make sure that people see the things that they do, because activists are always really bashful, and they're like, oh, I'm just an ordinary dude. Well, it's true, you're an ordinary dude, but you're doing extraordinary things. Don't denigrate yourself, you know? Let's get these lessons out there. Let's get these stories heard. Let's enhance the consciousness and the awareness of everything that's going on and give people the choice about whether or not they apply the knowledge, regardless of whether or not I choose to apply to it or abide by it, or subscribe to it. I just put it out there for people to hear so that they can make the decision for themselves.
And that's valuable points, guys, and that's awesome. And I'm a little bit different even further still, because I will actually introduce myself as just being a regular, everyday, average, normal guy. But I say, look what I'm doing now. And if I can do it and I'm just a regular person, and we're all just regular people, I mean, take away the viewpoint that we have on the way we view celebrities, the way we view superstars, the way we view politicians, the way we view authority figures, people that stand above us and try to speak down to us. We're so conditioned and surrounded by these different paradigms that people are fed up with that whole way of doing things. And this is a time of empowerment. So I come out and I say, hey, I'm just a regular guy, but I'm doing extraordinary things and you can do it too. It's not about sitting there listening to me or listening to somebody else. It's about being inspired by information, like Vinny, like you said, just a conduit. That's all we are. We're just here trying to share information, share ideas. I look at it like a conversation. When we were going across the country, I introduced each event by just saying, you know, be brave enough to start a conversation that matters. That's what this is about. What matters to you? What affects you? What do you have to contribute? Is everything just honky-dory in the world? Are you so happy with the way things are going? And do you feel free to move around and to achieve success and to fulfill your dreams? Or do you feel restricted? And do you feel oppressed in any way? Or is there any issue that you have? Most people, everybody raised their hand and said, yeah, they're not happy with it. So I think we're all in agreement there, that we see that there's problems. And all people like us are doing, the way I see it, is we're trying to bring on some of the most brilliant minds we can find out there. We do not trust the mainstream because they don't, honestly, they don't do these topics any justice. They don't even cover it. A lot of them are just paid off and they're in a makeup studio for 2 hours prior to going on the air. And we just see that they're not genuine. It's all about money. So we're just people taking it upon ourselves in an incredible time with incredible information delivered by incredible people. And we're all just trying to contribute in our way. So I just think that everybody else has to, if they really want to participate, don't just sit on the sidelines, get up and find what your talent is. I didn't even know I could do this until I did it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you don't find out what kind of bravery you have until it's tested, don't you? I mean, when it comes to telling people things, I just had this, funnily enough, on Facebook today. I have a responsibility to say something, but not the responsibility to convince people that it's true. That's their job.
Yeah, and that's actually what the media was supposed to be. It was supposed to be a watchdog of the government, and B, it was supposed to be reporting the facts without bias. It was just supposed to say, hey, folks, this is what's going on. Here's the facts. But what's happened is it's been twisted so that now they work for the government. They work for the corporations. They're not there to represent the people, and they're not there reporting the facts. So now that means that we're in a position where we can keep tuning in and supporting these guys, or we can start becoming the media. And that's why I appreciate guys like you. And Vinny, you're out there also doing work, you know, on the streets. You got the bullhorn. You're out there talking to people, interacting with people. I think that's way more powerful than just posting stuff on Facebook, although I think that's also valuable. But I noticed when I was out in Canada in all these different spots, actually seeing people face to face and shaking their hands and giving them hugs and talking and laughing and sharing stories and sharing ideas, the energy that I felt from that and that I know those people felt was just, you know, you'll remember it for the rest of your life. It was amazing. And so I think that getting out there and really physically interacting with people and having these discussions, keep this conversation going. I think that's going to create more change than just sitting there and, you know, griping online. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, online's where the battlefield is to a degree.
Oh, of course. But I'm saying if we can, like, imagine we could take – look at all the people we interact with online.
Well, could I say something different? Because it's about a holistic approach. All right, it shouldn't be just about Facebook or just about Twitter. How about both? And then what about YouTube on top of that? Okay, and then what else can you do? Well, there's Spreaker, there's iHeartRadio. So that's just in terms of a media context if you actually want to get there. Now, the second part is where do you get your content from? I see radio hosts as parasites, more or less. We feed off what I see as the real hard workers, the people who are reading the documents, the legislation, writing to Congress, testifying before congressional committees, etc. These are the people who do the real nuts and bolts stuff right at the top levels. That's the real work I feel. And yeah, my job's real as well, but it wouldn't exist without theirs. And their job's real, but nobody would hear about them doing it if it wasn't for people doing what I do. You see what I'm saying? It's a exactly. It's a symbiotic relationship. It's called a Mobius. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the shape of a Mobius, those of you who are listening, but imagine you've got a piece of paper in front of you, now folded over lengthways, and you've got kind of like a like a rectangle, right? And then just twist both ends of it, and it turns it into like a spiral. And then double connect helix. Those two spiral ends together in a circle, and that's a Mobius. So it's up and down, and it's around and round, and it all goes in a circle, and it's a symbiotic relationship, more or less. That's what the truth movement's really all about. I've gotten hundreds and hundreds of activists who can't even use Skype. In a lot of cases, to learn how to do that. In some cases, taught them how to edit videos. In most cases, I simply interview them in a way that's comfortable and convenient for them, and then publish it out for people to hear, and then send them the links for them to email out in the old-fashioned way. That's the kind of service I provide. I do for people what they cannot do for themselves. And in my opinion, there's no real higher calling for any person who has skills.
What
who
do you
has
think
skills,
about
I mean.
Well, you know, the whole concept of media is really problematic to me because we created a culture where it was one way. We had television, radio, and then, of course, you know, secondary modalities, telephone, telegraph, and telewoman. And then we got email and the internet. But in the process of this, we disempowered nearly 99% of our population who became what they call a consumer. And a consumer was juxtaposed to a producer. So we had a culture where you had a small minority of producers and a large consumptive group, and it was inverted. When in fact, every person is a producer and a consumer, and ideally the balance would be that they are producing and consuming in equal measures. And media kept that inversion to the point where you had what became mind control through the media. And so a lot of what I'm striving for isn't to be a media figure. My name doesn't really appear on my shows. This was actually came up with a conversation I had with a lady who occasionally does talk shows with me, Chris Holly. And, you know, I said, look, it's not Off Planet Radio with Randy Moggins, although sometimes it'll be titled that way, but the show itself is Off Planet Radio, because it's not about me as a persona. It is about something that I set out to do, which was basically to expose mind control, alien abductions, existence of extraterrestrials, black science, and all of that stuff. So I want the people who listen to be producers, to be putting out information. And if that information comes to me in the form of an email, if it comes in the form of an interview I can't publish because they wish to be anonymous, we are still creating a stream of information that feeds out and empowers people.
Oh, that's great. And I love that. I love having the different motivations and perspectives of guys like you on, because it's just amazing to see, as Vinny was saying, it's symbiotic, how everybody has a feeling inside of how they can best contribute and what their calling is and what their skill sets are and what their knowledge base is. And, you know, I have my unique way of doing it. Vinny, you have yours. Randy, you have yours. And there's so many other people out there. Mm-hmm. And the worst thing we could do would be to just start copying each other and doing it all the same way. I think the power that we have as sort of grassroots, uncensored voices is to keep that, to hold on to that uniqueness, because everybody out there that's listening, they also have some kind of a unique ability or talent or piece of knowledge or their own creative expression. And this is what's being shut down in the system that is imposing itself more and more. And so that's got to be the fight, is that fight for the individual expression, we've got to translate that to our children, to the young people, to encourage that imagination, to encourage that individuality, to understand how to say no and how to really express themselves completely. I think that's really where we're going to create more change, is if we start with that. And unfortunately, kind of going back a little bit to talking about people that are just out there griping, a lot of people are just in a space of being completely disempowered. The system has been successful in completely oppressing their human spirit. And so what we're doing, I think, is very important. And I think we should, we should have a blast doing it, but keep the goal in perspective and never stray from what it was that originally called us to do this work.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just watched this, what was it called? The X-Men movie. And there's a great line in it. Just because a man stumbles, loses his way, doesn't mean he's lost forever. And I don't know about you guys, but I've been lost a couple of times, you know, on the road of truth. And just go, oh, my God, I can't believe this. Yeah. And then you kind of start to feel bad about yourself. And I think a great way that I've learned to deal with it is I've turned all my bad attributes and started to try and use them for good purposes. Like, for example, I'm a shameless self-promoting narcissistic salesman. So I thought, how could I put that to good use? I know. I can shamelessly promote the truth and other people and make up for their direct lack of narcissism and salesman skills and help them to get their message out there, right? That's the thing about satanic inversion, ladies and gentlemen. You take whatever is and you do it the opposite. It works the exact other way around as well. You can take any evil and do the exact opposite of what it is, and you wind up doing something good. Isn't that interesting? And when people say, oh, you know, what can I do about it? Well, it's just like what David was saying before. You know, you've got to find your talent. You find your skill set, something that you're passionate about first and foremost. If you ain't passionate about it, you're not going to be up till 4 o'clock in the morning editing a radio show. You're not going to be willing to get out of bed at 3 o'clock in the morning 5 days a week in order to do a two-hour radio show for 6 months in a row when you've also got a job. If you're not passionate about it, if you don't really care enough to sacrifice whatever you have that is worth sacrificing to save your life, to save the lives of others, don't even bother starting, mate. You haven't had your awakening yet. And there'll be many more to come even after you have that one. I'm not sure about you guys, but it started to seem a bit like the movie Inception. Dreams within dreams within dreams within dreams. Exactly. I keep waking up again and again and again, only to realize later on that I was still dreaming and need to wake up yet again.
But the the concept of Inception is actually very interesting, because there's a process that you can look at from another viewpoint as well. We look at things so linear and three-dimensional rather than realizing that we live in a very complex matrix of matter, space, something they call time. I don't understand it. But we function in something where at every moment we have an inception point where we literally can go in and insert a new data point and begin to stream off of that. It's what I call nodes, the ability to just tangentially shoot off of where you're at. And that sounds wild and crazy, but that's actually the way I think. And it's actually the way that you can reboot yourself after you've gotten lost, going off the path, going out and gotten drunk and fallen into a ditch, you know, shot your dog, whatever. You basically can reboot just by understanding that you're only one point at any given time away from another starting point, an inception.
Oh, well said. And I think that's key, because I think we've all been in our situation of being down in the dumps and having our own just incredible tsunami of challenges, and that's an understatement. But you know what? Those are the things that shape you and forge you. And I look at it from the perspective of teaching martial arts for a living, and it's a very hard discipline. There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. There's a lot of things you don't want to do. You're constantly in a battle where you're like, I just really don't want to do another push-up. I really don't, but I know that I have to, because it's part of the growing process. It's part of growing stronger. And only through that are you forged into what you're going to be next. And then you're now you're more empowered to take on that next challenge. And then that challenge is going to beat you down and force you to rise up from those ashes as well. And then you're going to go to the next level. And it's a constant process of continuing growth, as Bruce Lee would put it. I think it's the same in what we're doing here, right?
I heard an interesting story. Thomas Sheridan told me this. Imagine the pain that a caterpillar goes through when it's inside that chrysalis turning into a butterfly. Imagine wings coming through the flesh in your back. Imagine a big antenna coming out of your head. Your entire fat, plump, luscious little wriggly body turning into something that's hardened yet beautiful. It's the same thing that we have to all go through, I think, and it's the change that causes the pain, and it's not about what you're going to turn into, because you ultimately don't really know. It's about how you're changing in the moment. There really is only one moment. It's all throughout history, will stretch on all throughout eternity. It's a constant moment. You've shared it with everything that has ever existed or ever will, right? And I think that's quite encouraging, because it means that what you do right now makes a freaking difference. Pay attention, right. Eh?
And that's all we have to do. And I think actually what you just said, Vinny, and talking about the whole caterpillar analogy and what we're trying to share here, that's what we're going through collectively on this planet, I think. And that's why we're seeing so much of this buildup and all these challenges that we have to overcome, is that these are the signs that we're going through that stage of growing. That's how I look at it. Now, that doesn't mean we can just ride it out and hope for the best. We do have to take action. But that's part of it. That's why we have to take action, because by taking that action and by going on this journey fearlessly and facing this like real men, like real warriors, like real women, really empowered people, like empowering ourselves, I think that's what's going to guide us through to the next stage. Very similar to what your analogy was referencing there, Vinny. So it's as above, so below. And what's happening on an individual level is magnified on a collective level. And in that sense, it's not doom and gloom. It's actually, it means that you do play a part. And the worst thing ever is sitting there just watching it happen and not doing a thing about it. That's where you're going to start to feel depression kick in. That's where you're going to start to feel hopeless. And all that anxiety is going to be flooding into your mind constantly. But the minute you do even one little thing to try to make a difference in your own personal life, or in your community or your country or whatever, that's, I think, a key to getting rid of that feeling of being hopeless.
And also gallows humor, you know. You should see people in the battlefields and everything like that when they're seeing the most horrific stuff known to man. They're cracking jokes and everything, mate. Look, things are really horrible, all right? Probably 10,000 times more horrible than you could ever conceivably imagine that they are. And they're worse than that. So
cheer up, folks.
yeah. See, even right there, there's making light of a bad situation. Now, people think that that's a bad thing. Oh, you're not taking this seriously enough. Mate, I think you're taking yourself too seriously. In fact, I think you're taking yourself seriously enough for the both of us. Stop getting so aggro, man. I mean, seriously. I mean, look, it's just the end of the world. What have you got to worry about?
Really?
I was just going to say, it is really a ride in an amusement park, like Bill Hicks would put it. And I think we've had some great comedians out there that have – I mean, comedy is just a funny way of telling the truth, actually, if you think about it. And the best ones can inspire something in you to laugh about something that is conceivably a bad situation. But it actually can – it can do one of two things. It can shut you down and just get you to go, okay, I laughed about it. It's out of my system. Now I don't want to look at it anymore. Or – it can do the opposite, which is to actually inspire you to take a serious look afterwards, because you got all the laughs out of your system. You feel a little bit better. You feel energized. And now you can really go and take a deep, hard look at this stuff. And that's, I think, the beauty of bringing some comedy into it, for sure.
Well, you know, don't take yourself too seriously. Especially when you're echoing in the background.
Are you echoing?
I was.
He is.
Oh, you're not echoing now. Anybody echoing?
I don't know.
No, okay.
No, it sounds good now, but it was an interesting echo. I liked it.
Yeah, it's like Dr. Echo and Mr. Hyde.
So, Randy, what's been on your radar lately? What have you been into? What have you been curious
What's been on the radar
about?
Of off-planet radio?
Yeah, the radar, yeah.
The off-planet radar.
You know, oddly enough, this is pretty down-to-earth stuff, but I'm dealing a lot right now with the so-called financial system and really penetrating what it is that has made this faux money system work so well for them and not for the common people.
Bank of International Settlements. Sorry, go ahead.
I'd say willful ignorance, but I feel like.
Well, the bottom line is that what I'm learning is, you know, eventually going to kind of come out in, I think, a torrent of information that I'm hoping, you know, people will be able to assimilate, because it really is a spiritual battle. What we're looking at with the financial system is the counterfeiting of human energy, the taking of souls. The money system has disempowered people in probably the most horrific way of all, because it's made them debtors and servants to church and state, or state acting as church and church acting as state. through the fiat money system, and the debts that have allegedly been incurred by every man, woman, and child on the planet.
Sorry to jump in there, Randy. We're going to go to break. I'm so glad you brought up money. I really want to get your guys' take on this on the other side. And we're back, folks, for the second hour of the Man Talk Project. I think it's part six. That's what I'm going to go with. I think so. We've done a lot of parts. It's kind of turning into like the Rocky series at this point. So we don't know how many parts there really are. But each one are just as heavy hitting. They demonstrate manliness, endurance, intelligence, and witty humor. And it's an honor to be here again with you tonight, ladies and gentlemen. And I have the Vinny Eastwood and the Randy Moggins joining me tonight. And we're talking about money in this episode, in this section, in this hour. Because I think we're going to need a whole hour to really break this whole thing down. And I'm going to open it up with some Dr. Carol Quigley, because you can't really talk about the international bankers without bringing him up. And I read this last week on the show, but for those who missed it and those who might not be aware of who Quigley was, he was, of course, a professor of history at Georgetown University. He was the mentor to President Bill Clinton. And he was also an insider. He was actually groomed specifically by the international bankers for the international bankers. And he said this. He said, "I know of the operations of this network," and he's talking about the network of international bankers, "because I've studied it for 20 years and was permitted for 2 years in the early 1960s to examine its papers and secret records. I have no aversion to it or to most of its aims, and have, for much of my life, been close to it and to many of its instruments. In general, my chief difference of opinion is that it wishes to remain unknown, and I believe its role in history is significant enough to be known." And he goes on to speak about the international banking network. He says, "The powers of financial capitalism had another far-reaching aim, nothing less than to create a world system of financial control in private hands, able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy of the world as a whole. This system was to be controlled in a feudalist fashion, by the central banks of the world acting in concert, by secret agreements arrived at in frequent private meetings and conferences. The apex of this system was to be the Bank of the International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, a private bank owned and controlled by the world's central banks, which were themselves private corporations." So let's talk about money from that standpoint and see if he was accurate in his assessment of where this financial system is headed. I want to go to Randy first, and then Vinny, I want you to chime in as well. So Randy, you were talking a bit about it. Where do we go from here?
Yeah, that quote from Carol Quigley, that's a classic. I find it interesting that he talks about the money being in private hands. In fact, however you define the term private, it would be very different than what you would understand it. The money is not in private hands. The money is in the hands of corporations. And this is the biggest problem that we face, is that we have corporations that are acting as if and treated as though they are an entity unto themselves, when in fact it was Pope Innocent II and later on several other figures who commented. See, corporatism is a very, very old thing. We think of it as a new concept. It goes as far back as the earliest empires of Mesopotamia, and it is part of the system that has ensnared the world. But to redirect back, there are no private aspects to the banking system. The banking system is corporatism. And when you begin to look at corporatism, you find that what Pope Innocent II said was that they are artificial entities, artifices, valid only in consideration of law. So a corporation is not a living soul. It is not a living being. And we had traditionally had in the United States, and I'm not familiar with jurisprudence in Canada or New Zealand, but I suspect that all of this is binding because we're under one system.
It's the same, yeah.
The courts have generally found that when they examine cases on a case-by-case basis, the Supreme Court said that in order to find the artifice, one must look contrarily to the living soul, meaning that corporations are an artifice. They are constructs of human intelligence like a machine. They are not living, breathing human beings or souls. And it's an important distinction to make because I don't think Mr. Quigley made that distinction intellectually in any of his writings.
Could it be, sorry, Randy, just to get in there, could it be that he was referencing the difference between how most people in America, for example, or even in Canada, think that it's a government agency that produces their currency and that that money is built, is, you know, it's basically there by the government for the people and it's there to serve them, when in fact it is not that. I mean, you look in America, you've got the Federal Reserve System, which could be looked at from the perspective maybe that he was coming from as you know, it's privately owned. Or privately, as in terms of it's not run by the government, it's not a federal governmental agency, right? Do you think that
could I
there's
interject?
A possibility that's where he was coming from?
Well, I think it stems from his belief, and the belief of the elite is that we're too dangerous to be left to our own devices, and that for our own good we need to be controlled, and that's the reason why Carol Quigley thinks that they're so valuable, because without them, oh, humanity would get completely into tatters, would have no control of any kind, and it'd just be a disaster.
Well, yeah. That's essentially what they believe, but what they created was a system of robotics, and in the process, what they've done is they've dehumanized both themselves and subjugated those who are still among the living. I don't make the distinction. Look, governments are corporations. They're all corporations. All banks are corporations.
Yeah.
You operate through a corporation in order to protect yourself and indemnify yourself against loss.
And for anybody that might not believe that's true, you can actually go and look up the country of Canada, and it's Canada Day tomorrow. So you can go up and look up your country's corporation number on the New York Securities and Exchange Commission, mm-hmm. and you can see it right underneath companies like Goldman Sachs and all these other, you know, huge companies. And you can realize that not only is your country corporatized, but your province is corporatized, your town is corporatized, mm-hmm. and you are now corporatized. So exactly
the same for New Zealanders on the other end of the empire. It's called Her Majesty the Queen in Right of New Zealand on the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Yep. Which is a subsidiary of the Crown of London. Just as here in the United States, you have the District of Columbia, 10 square miles. Every nation has this, but I want to make the distinction because it's important. The money system as it was set up and as it implemented through corporations has resulted in the death of human conscience in terms of interactions with each other. When you put up a facade like a corporation and you proceed to operate through it, you devalue the human beings who are the creative assets in the society itself. And people get lost in all of the legal aspects and the intricacies of economics and forget that at the end of the day, there's one transaction that occurs. It is between one living soul and another living soul.
That's amazing, and I'm so glad you said that. And I always thought of it as currency. They say that here's the currency that you're going to use to be an intermediary between you and the goods and services that you want from your fellow man. But what you're doing, I mean, I always made the example of if you go over to your grandma's place and she makes you her famous, you know, spaghetti dinner, is she going to say then afterwards, okay, little Johnny, that's going to be $50? No, she's doing it out of the goodness of her heart.
She's gifting.
She's gifting. And that to me is true currency between two ultimately electromagnetic beings. We're talking about electricity here and the exchange of energy. Whereas now this monetary system, and I'm glad you went all the way back to ancient Mesopotamia and looking at the history of empire and how money money wasn't something that just naturally evolved from barter and trade. We have to really look into it and realize that there was something that was maliciously imposed as a system of ultimately keeping the populace under control. And that's what we've always had in various forms, and that's what we have today. And it's just gotten refined and revised and updated. And like you said, Randy, they're now – it's so machine-like. And everything in society is moving towards integration with machines, with technology. And our interactions with each other are very machine-like. And it's based on this idea that we, like you said, we need to be controlled. And otherwise, we're just going to go – it's going to go to chaos. But here we are in the middle of chaos within this very system. And I think it's because of the fact that it's so mechanized that we see this happening.
Well, the chaos is planned. And, you know, that goes into the whole Ordo ab chaos. We don't have to talk about that. I think that's basic consciousness 101.
Well, actually, but it's the motto of the 33rd degree of Freemason. Well, it's anything but 101. Yeah. But yeah,
yeah. but it, more than anything else, it's a model for a system.
Yeah.
Because every time they fail, they give you a bigger and better failure to replace it. And the rhetoric that goes on behind that particular type of thinking is how you get to a monolithic system like you have presently in the world with this world banking cartel that has now for over a century run global war systems around the planet, murdering millions, savaging the infrastructures of any country who won't play ball with them. And basically in the collateral for all of this is human lives. But again, I go back to this. There is a death that occurs here, and it is occurring with our money because we are so far removed from an actual interactive value with each other that we do not have the connection anymore. I go into stores. I go to a convenience store and I buy a bottle of water. The clerk doesn't even look up from the counter to take my money, much less thank me or offer to even put the frickin' thing in a bag.
Yeah.
See, this is where we're at. We're so degraded now that the machine-like aspects have kicked in, and we no longer do business as a goodwill motion towards each other, which was not true even in my lifetime. I remember when business was something that was done on a somewhat congenial level. It was considered to be good manners to conduct business with a certain degree of gentility, kindness, and that's not the case anymore. It's now a bloody ruthless game.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's a gangster proverb: the players change, but the game, it stays the same.
That's right.
Yeah,
it's true. And it's when you look, actually, the mafia and that whole underground black market criminal network, whatever you want to call it, is such a great reference for people because they can soon realize that nothing is different within the financial systems, the political systems. And it's part of the process of realizing the solution to this is that we have to really identify where we went wrong to begin with. And I think where we went wrong is that we didn't put the system in check enough. We fell asleep at the wheel. These international bankers, these, you know, the elite's power structure, whatever you want to call it, the cabal, the cartel, they decided that they were going to be the ones that were going to take control of this ship. And I look at them very much like pirates. And they basically hijack the vessel. And when you get into the legal terminology, that's exactly what happens. You're a citizen that is part of a ship.
You're a maritime law system. Ship.
Exactly, Congress. Maritime law.
Well, you see them as pirates because they are.
Hollow legs and all, man. And patches on the eyes and the whole ball.
And they repeat stuff like parrots on the shoulders.
Yeah, they do.
Just call me Stumpy, mate.
Oh, man. And this is where it stands. And the problem is that so many people are still watching the stock markets and they're following the Financial Times and they're you know, everybody, even the mainstream media is talking about how this economic system we have is just plummeting through the floor. It's pretty much mainstream news now. And then what do you see? you see them banging the war drums again. And you've got this whole ISIS thing going on. Funny name, that. ISIS thing going on in the Middle East. And you've got all these other things going on. And you start, and people just need to start understanding that it's all related to money. It all relates to the money. And if you follow the money, and not to say that money's the goal here. I mean, we're talking about the people that can print it out of thin air as much as they want. Money is just a mechanism of control. It's just a means to an end. But if you can follow that, and realize that it is all connected. None of this stuff is random. You know, and we have politicians standing up and saying publicly, well, the only way to save America is to go to war. That's how we're going to make the money to save the economy. Like, that's just absolutely ridiculous. If we need war to actually change the direction of the economy, you better start wondering what the hell is going on with the economy to begin with, right?
Yeah.
Well, one false premise I'm going to jump in here is – they say they create money out of thin air. In the truest sense of the word, they do not create money out of thin air. They create debt out of thin air.
Yes,
and
yes.
It's not thin air that they've created the debt from. They've actually taken a value and inverted it. The only creative aspect is the intelligence, the soul, and the spirit of a living human being. What they have done through their system is that they have cashiered the elements of the human creative process. Only a living human being, only a living soul, one person has the ability to generate actual value or what would truly be called money. When you walk into a bank, you're under the impression that the bank is lending you money. But actually, according to the Federal Reserve publication, Modern Money Mechanics, they say that banks create money out of nothing because they're not allowed to lend their own assets. That's actually not true either, because when you look at what a bank does, you go into a bank and you take out a loan. You buy a car, you mortgage a house. The bank takes a piece of paper, which it never signs itself, so it's not a true contract. It then takes the proceeds from the note that you just signed. It hands you something of a piece of funny paper, usually a check if you even get that, but generally it's now a non-paper transaction, just digits in a computer. But at the end of the day, what they do is they post that onto their books as an asset. So who was the creditor? You were. You, the person who walked into that institution and took out what you thought was a loan, when in fact what you were doing was you were in the process of loaning value to access values that you wish to possess.
Oh, yeah, and it's mind-blowing when you go down this journey, folks, and I highly recommend you do. What Randy's talking about here is going to give you some perspective. It's fully documented. I remember swimming through this stuff for months, and I still constantly reflect on it. And I hats off to you, Randy, for really chasing this by its tail and going for it. Because when you can really understand how the actual process really works, not the way that it's sold to you, not the way that it works on TV or in some imaginary world that we think is reality, but the way it actually really takes place and goes down, you need to really get your head around that and research it, because you'll start to realize that the only thing that has value is you, because you're a living, breathing being. I mean, I did an interview recently with Santos Bonacci, and he did the whole interview with two pieces of paper up. He had his birth certificate and his certificate of live birth, and he was showing the difference between the two and referencing the fact that on one side you're dealing with the corporation. And of course, the word corpse is right there. It's right in your face that it's a dead entity that's just representative. It's a straw man. And then you have the certificate of live birth. And it says right on there, your name. It's not in all capital letters. And it's there. And it says that you are living. It's just proof that you're a living being. And I think you got to pay like $50 or something to get this from the registry. But it's your certificate of live birth. And he's been using that as his identification, as opposed to showing them the ID that's related to the all caps straw man name. And it was just interesting, because it's just slight plays on words and spellings and things that most people wouldn't notice. So if they're doing it in that fashion, they've got to be afraid of something. And if they're doing it based on the premise of a lie or of not giving you the full amount of information, then there is an agenda there that is not in your best interest. Otherwise, they would just come right out and inform you of that. So there is something else going on here. And I think that digging into this part of what's going on in the system is actually part of the key of liberating ourselves from it. I mean,
speaking
what do you guys
of
think?
Part of the key, guess what the name of the New Zealand Prime Minister is? John Key. Who did he work for 2 years in New York? The Federal Reserve? What was he in charge of? European bond and derivatives trade? And what happened when he came here to be Prime Minister of the New Zealand? Got us in more debt in his first term than all previous Prime Ministers in the country's history combined.
And that is a successful man in the finance world. More debt, because that's all they can create. Going back to what Santos was talking about, the live birth versus birth certificate, and you can take any number of documents and you can begin to play with them. And I would encourage people to get comfortable with the idea of doing this, but begin to play in your head a little bit, because something happened here. There was a conversion. There was a conversion from a living soul into an artifice. Yeah. Somebody who is now considered by the state to be dependent. You may notice that we have orphans courts and things like that. And what happens is really all of these courts have operated under the premise that you are not able to take care of your own affairs and that you require the services of something we call an attorney, a medieval term. Actually, the attorney was actually the one who transferred property, including slaves, from one feudal landowner to another. That's the origin of your attorneys and your legal profession today. And so their job is basically to make a conversion from one slave owner to another. And the more you look at legal paper and you begin to look at the documents and the way that language is outlaid on a document, you're going to begin to see that constantly you're in a state of conversion. One exercise is to look at any document, and there will be one central feature to them, and you will be pointed to it usually with an X. Anybody know what this is?
Oh, go ahead.
It's a line. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I learned penmanship by the time I was in fourth grade. I could write my name in cursive, and I no longer required lines. Why in the hell do they put lines on a piece of paper?
And this is the dotted line you're talking about, right?
Well, it can be dotted. It can be solid.
I have no idea what you're talking about. When I used cursives when I was a child, I got my mouth washed out with soap.
Oh, no. Begin to look at legal documents differently. Understand that when you sign on a line anywhere, that is an act of conversion. There will be another place on that document that will point back to the artifice that you've become as a result of signing that document on that line. That line is not there to help you write straighter.
Because they need your agreement. They need your consent.
You're the only person that can make the conversion. This is the flaw with the straw man principle. The government cannot create a straw man. They can't do it. You have to create the straw man. It may be done for you at some point, such as when you are, quote, born, and when you are given a, quote, name. But at some point, we begin to sign documents, and we are making conversions every day, signing checks, credit card slips, contracts, anything. And we all do it. This is not a blame game here. Yep. We're all doing it. What we need to do now is be aware of the mechanics of what's happening so that we can begin to correct the situation.
Randy, this reminds me of the speech that the architect of the Matrix gave to Neo. It's choice. The problem is choice. And they found that most people were willing to accept the program provided they had a choice, even if they were only aware of the choice at some random unconscious level.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, yeah. Mm-hmm. No kidding.
But we have more choices than we know once we begin to change our consciousness about what's going on around us as relates to money specifically. Because there's something beyond money here, and it has to do with the creative aspect of a living being, a living soul. This is a very spiritual subject. And anybody that's ever read the Bible knows specifically that it does address money. I don't know about some of the other holy books specifically, but I do know that there is a spiritual component to the way we transact business that is addressed on a broad scale by spiritual systems. And we need to become aware of what's happened to us as we have been converted into this system.
Oh, for sure. And there, I mean, some people could argue that we could just come up with a better system, but we have to ultimately remember that no matter where we go, we have to take a look at, you know, number one, the resources that we have on this planet to work with. We have to look at a system that would actually work in conjunction with this element you were talking about, Randy, that was the, you know, the creative force within the human being and a true interaction and currency between human beings. And it has to serve everybody. It can't just be something that funnels all of the energy, wealth, and resources up to a tiny few at the top. And with that, gentlemen, we are heading to the last break of the show. We got one segment on the upside. And we're back. One segment left of the Man Talk Project. We're here with Vinny Eastwood, VinnyEastwoodShow.com, and Randy Moggins, OffPlanetRadio.com.
Oh, that's the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. Eastwood isn't go ahead, make my news.
Exactly. And Vinny, go ahead and make my news on your take on money. What do you think, man? Do we need it? How do we fix it? I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, if you go to the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, there's two donate buttons there, one for a one-off gift and one for a regular subscription so that you give me money on a monthly basis. So, yeah, we do need it. What are you using it for and what are you doing to earn it is my question to people. And I think what we normally do is we rationalize quite a lot and we generalize quite a lot. Just like 97% of statistics are made up. We rationalize, we generalize, and we make up figures to justify whatever it is we originally thought in the first freaking place. Isn't that interesting? And my thoughts on money in terms of central government level, where the money should be distributed from, I like the convenience of cash. It has a great utilization effort. I like the idea of expandable liquidity. So that way, if there's not enough money in the economy in order to pay for something, let's say the country needs or whatever, they can simply make more cash freely available in order to pay for those goods and services that the country or person requires, right? However, I don't like the whole idea of inflation being hidden away as a tax. I don't like the idea of income tax. I think they're illegal. And indeed they are today. You can prove that they're illegal because there's no frickin' law requiring you to pay them. Not in the United States anyway. And on top of that, if you want to actually have a economy that runs well, it needs to be mathematically perfect. It has to totally feed into itself and never grow too fast or never shrink too fast, more or less. It actually maintains stability. Now, these were the original PR reasons why a central bank was needed, more or less a private central bank. However, the reality is very different. With, let's say, Congress in the United States issuing the public currency debt-free as and when it is needed, and Congress setting the value of said currency, provided the Congress isn't corrupt, then it could work. It's what they call social credit. It worked way back in the day for New Zealand really well. We built many, many homes in the midst of the Great Depression for people to live in, you know, and the people still living in them today that were built to last. It's the kind of way I'd like to see money being run. And if there's no attached debt to currency as it's running around, you don't have like cash flow, like a river, a big lake at the end of it where all the money winds up, which is far, far larger than any share anyone else gets. And it's not like, oh, we need equitable share, blah, 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 blah. All it is this. If you are breaking the law, committing a crime, and you're making a hell of a lot of money off of it, and you don't get pulled up for your crime, is that the problem of the monetary system itself, or is that the fault of the criminal who's running the monetary system? I think it's a very important distinction, because we always go on about the bankers, this, the bankers, that, and whatever. And socialists like to criticize the rich. But at the end of the day, it's not actually wealthy people that are the problem. It is the super, uber wealthy, the ones that actually are in all these secret societies and think tanks and COINTELPRO groups and whatnot. They're the rich ones that you actually got to be worried about. Monetary value is not a representation of how much of a scumbag somebody is, unless it's off the frickin' charts and was obtained through fraud.
Let me play with that for a minute. Who gets to decide what's off the charts? To somebody who is living hand to mouth, my lifestyle would probably appear to be off the charts. I could be considered to be an effete, snobbish bastard to somebody who was, you know, down on their luck.
Could I explain this then? Because that's a good point. Sure. That's a good point that you raised. Because I just watched a documentary about this the other day, and they went around and they asked Americans, so what do you think would be the equitable spread? You know, and they said, oh well, you know, each group, you know, middle class, upper middle class, down to the lower class, they'd all get maybe a spread of about 10%. The lowest 50% owning about 10%, and then the next 20% of the population or basically, it appeared very equitable, around about 20 to 30% equity between the high middle class and the super wealthy, right? That's what they all thought would be equitable. And then they got asked, well, what do you think it currently is? And they thought, well, it's really unequal. And then they laid over a chart of what it actually is. And it turns out that about 95% of the wealth belongs to less than 1% of the population. So much, in fact, that if you had a bar graph to do the starting page, right, from the measurement from the lowest class, their average wealth, versus the top 1%, you'd have to have the chart topped and repeated in its height over pages and pages about 6 or 7 times. That's what I mean by off the chart. If it's so out of kilter with everybody else, even the people who you think are reasonably moderately wealthy or something, they'd not even a smidgen or a dot on the page by comparison to this gargantuan monster of specifically stolen wealth and created wealth through fraud and inflation and scumbaggery and illegal wars, etc. That's all it is. I think if we punish people for their crimes, it would be very difficult for criminals to become in control of the system. What's problematic is that they're already in control, and it's a paradox of how exactly do you get people out of the system once they're in, once they control it. And activist Penny Bright and private prosecutor Graham McCready recently took the former mayor of Auckland, Mr. John Banks, who's a high-level masoneer, and he's been involved in a lot of corruption over the years. We never could get anything to stick to him because the police wouldn't investigate him, and umpteen different agencies, from the ombudsman to whoever. Nobody would investigate him. Nobody would take him to trial. Nobody would try and convict him. And so they said, well, let's privately prosecute him. And they got him freaking convicted. And he's gone burgers. And this has just opened up a whole big wave for me, that people taking personal responsibility for prosecuting privately specific scumbags for their scumbaggery will send shockwaves throughout the entire system, because it means that, hey, oh my God, you can actually take them in and get them taken out. Not in the murder sense of the word, but in the political sphere sense of the word, once they're exposed and deposed off their little pedestals. But there's still scumbags that will work their way into it. So it's a process. And as the Founding Fathers said, the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. And the problem is we just haven't been vigilant for quite some time, have we? And it's allowed all these scumbags to take control of it. Kind of like scum on a pond. It resides near the top, and it chokes out all the light from the sun and all the nutrients therein, and everything else withers and dies below the surface.
Well, let me introduce at this point a ridiculous and inconceivable idea of possibly dealing with this situation. Because the way I see it, when you listen to people go on, like you hear these economists back and forth talking about how this system is more superior to this system, and there's all this arguing about how we can fix the monetary system, how we can do it. Provided that we had this wall of secrecy taken down regarding free energy, or what has been called free energy, but basically just something that is sustainable, that's not based on fossil fuels and, you know, all this, how would it look to you in something that was not a society based on money at all? We're talking about, you know, a moneyless system where you don't have this mechanism that can become corruptible and can be used as a leverage against the people.
Well, I don't know, David. I mean, if you eliminated psychopaths entirely from the human race, maybe that kind of system would be possible. But unfortunately, you do have these, well, for lack of a better word, demonic characters who desire only power. And at the moment, it comes from money. And if you eliminate money, they'll find another way for power. So here's the way. How do you eliminate people having power over other people is more the question, rather than reforming monetary policy in and of itself?
Yes, it is part of the question. I'm just saying that if, you know, you think about what are the mechanisms of control ultimately?
Well, ultimately the mechanisms of control go back to corporatism, because one person cannot have control over another person. I mean, you can have hand-to-hand combat, but that's why, David, you do what you do, so that your students, when somebody gets in their face, can prevail. You know, it's just a kick-ass attitude. The way this developed was largely through models, much like the feudal system, where they amassed power through military forces. That is the backing of all currencies. That is why you have wars raging on every continent, because you have banking systems which require armies in order to enforce acceptance of their fiat money systems.
Well, exactly. But if I could just say, like, yeah. Imagine this: like, do we have the resources on the planet so that everybody could technically be, you know, wealthy? I mean, are we wealthy as a planet? That's question number one. I think so. I think there's more than enough to go around. This is why we'd have to have some kind of a free energy type model, right? So that people aren't in a situation where they have to fight over these things. If we're creating abundance from the natural resources that we are all wealthy in, then you're eliminating the need for people to be – I mean, a lot of crime and a lot of these things come from the fact that people don't have enough to survive. Yeah. And then one group militarily goes in, dominates the resources, and then enslaves the people through, you know, this whole idea that there are people that have a right to rule over others, and there are people that have a right to accept the rules of those people that rule over them. But the truth is that we are all human beings. We all live on this planet. We're the only species on this planet that operates within a monetary system. And so far, the history of it, no matter where you look, the element that you can keep coming back to is that there's the military force aspect and this conquest idea and the psychopaths, like you were bringing up, Vinny, but they're also a product of this system that that has been created through financial control. So if you're eliminating those elements and people are given everything that they need and require, and people have access to free sources of energy, there's no need to go and break into somebody's house and steal their goods, because you have plenty of everything. And if it's equally distributed, and we've eliminated these ideas and these boundaries of, oh, well, you know, you can't have it unless you've got the right amount of money, versus you can't have it because we don't have the resources or whatever.
See, I think you're talking about can be accomplished without reform of the monetary system and without unlimited resources and without abundance. It would require moral fiber across the entirety of the world. That would be what would prevent you from going in and taking something from somebody else. That would accomplish all these things, the working together, the community, and all of that kind of thing. There's a lot of people with moral fiber and a moral obligation to help their people, their country, their community, etc., actually do. And I see remarkably large amounts of examples after this. After every natural disaster, in complete opposition to what the controllers say. People don't fight around scratching over the last available resources. Actually, it shows they share them and they start caring about each other. And neighbors that haven't even talked to each other and have been living next to each other for 5 years suddenly have a reason to talk and help each other out. The elderly start getting taken care of by children. Students start getting out shovels and wheelbarrows and cleaning dirt off the sidewalks and things like that. In a real crisis, people do come together and they do support each other and they do care about each other. This is why the bankers are never in the middle of real crises that they create. I've never seen David Rockefeller with a helmet on in a foxhole.
Exactly. And I think that if we started changing the way we think, because I think that what we're doing
David, I'm sorry to interrupt again, but what if we were to convince people that there's a real crisis on right now and that they need to get together with their communities and they need to start making a difference right here, today, as in, boom, earthquake just shattered and you see everybody dying around you, trapped under rubble and stuff like that, and they're screaming for your help and you've got to get them out of rubble. That kind of motivation.
And you're asking what would happen I think people would come together.
Mm-hmm.
I think there'd be people that would be paralyzed with fear, but I think there would be enough people that would desire to A, survive, and B, they'd be smart enough to realize they can't survive on their own. They need to work with other people that are able to, you know, work well with them. So I think that ultimately people would come together.
Well, it's because I think our interpretation of threats has become somewhat skewed. Like when a police officer comes to my door, I don't think, oh, hi, officer, how nice to meet you. I think, oh, dear God, what has he got me in for? You know? And my perception is actually the correct perception. You know? Other people
with
like
plenty of statistical information to back that up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this isn't my opinion. I've got documents. I have the documents.
Well, there are no policemen.
Oh, yeah, there's only police officers, like corporate officers, like a chief executive officer.
Here again, you're dealing with artificial entities, they're corporate entities. What I'm trying to stress, and you're right.
Hey, does that mean that police officers don't have a soul?
On paper.
On paper.
All right, sorry, Randy.
Human beings occupying a suit and a title, but other than that.
You see, what I'm going after, but you're right, Vinny. This ultimately comes down to morality. And I tend to think that the overwhelming majority of humanity are moral inherently, but because of the conscience death that they've experienced in this system, they're not acting human anymore. And largely that is the corporatocracy that's done that. On paper, experientially, we have seen the degradation of the human soul and the human spirit as a result of a system that's based on artificial entities.
So could you have a system based on the human soul and the human spirit that still had some form of an intermediary form of exchange that could ultimately be corrupted still? Or could do you ever see – I mean, I don't think we could move into – a moneyless society overnight. I think this is,
it's a
dream. It'd be a long process.
I don't think that's necessary. I think what's necessary is to redefine money and to redefine value in a way that is not subjected to a debt-based monetary global system, which is what we have now.
I heard of a place, I don't remember the name, but they had no currency in their town, a village, a city or anything, and the only way you would gain social standing is by doing things for the community, like you would build a bridge for them or something of that nature and you'd name it after you. And it was actually your social currency became how you got things. Like, hey man, can I have mm-hmm. that? Who are you? I'm Vinny Eastwood. Oh, hell yeah! You can have this orange Vinny Eastwood. You're awesome. You know, and it happens to me. And it happens to me all the time. I've kind of like made that system my own to a degree. Whenever there's something I need, there's always something that turns up out of the blue in some kind of a mystical, synchronistic way that winds up bailing my ass.
Okay, perfect. And see, earlier when you promoted your PayPal, well, there wouldn't be a PayPal for somebody to punch the button if there was no Vinnie Eastwood who didn't have the Vinnie Eastwood show. So you've already created something that has marketable value, that's recognizable, that is a transference of energy from somebody who has received from you, and you receive it back in something that's tangible that we call money or credit. In the middle of that PayPal transaction live all kinds of creatures, grabbing and scratching to take their due from that money, not the least of which is the rate of inflation globally, the fees that are leveled on transactions, and all of the ancillary things that you have to pay out that are just bullshit in order to sustain yourself. If it was a pure transaction, it would be one-to-one.
But if it is a pure transaction, it would be one-to-one. I mean, it's like saying, how much is Vinnie Eastwood worth as a human being? If I said, oh, he's worth $10 million, every human being's worth $10 million, you're bringing it into a stage of comparing it to something that's completely artificial that we create.
But that's what they've right? done.
That's what
they've done. Could I interject?
I'm saying if we cut the middleman, if you want to build a bridge, all right, let's say you started with this. Let's say there's no central banking. There's just, you know, a community bank that prints money debt-free, tax-free, interest-free. Their job is to provide the money for the projects that will benefit the people in the community. What ends up happening after a while is instead of them going, hey, we've got plenty of money, plenty of resources, and the manpower to make it work because we're not stuck under all this hyperinflation and debt and all this stuff, so let's go borrow some money to build a bridge. Or eventually you're going to get to a point where you're like, well, let's just go build a goddamn bridge. Like, why do we even need to get there? Like, I'm not saying that'll happen right away, but do you see how eventually you would not even really need to operate with this form of exchange that gets in the way of the natural energy exchange, right?
Well, it's because I think in a voluntary system, money takes a back seat and it becomes all about time and resources, which today have been substituted for money. Oh, I don't have any time because I've got to work, but I got money. I don't have any beer tonight. I don't have any resources, but conveniently I've got this money because I didn't have any time. It's like that's kind of how it works, and you just wind up back at square one, and that's how the system is played, is that you think you're not getting anywhere, but in the meantime somebody's clipping the ticket every single time you get nowhere and making themselves get somewhere much, much further along and much, much better off than you are. And because you're not aware of the scam that is going on with each and every single transaction that you make, you think that you're free. And it's this illusion of freedom that people have really got to get their head around. And one of my friends, I was just like talking about resistance to the system, and he's like, oh, just Vinny, you're just a slave. You're just a slave anyway. It doesn't matter. And I say, well, that's true. Technically, on paper, I'm a slave. However, every dollar I get isn't because I'm working a slave job, and every dollar I spend it on is so that I can survive, so I can continue to expose scumbaggery in the slavery system. I think if you ever want to live a existence worth living, it should possibly quite likely be an ironic existence comparative to the world that you're living in.
And I know for sure. And I think that, you know, when we're thinking about this idea of the control that we're under and the slavery that we're under and this whole monetary paradigm, you think about religions. And I did a lot of study in religion, and I know that, Randy, you've done a lot as well. And we've seen that, you know, they may have come from originally good, well-meaning sources, but then, of course, they got corrupted. It became an instrument of corruption. And money was very much intertwined with the history of religious power over the people. And it was also interwoven with monarchies and the political power. So they all kind of work hand in hand, and the ultimate goal is there to keep the people where they want them. And yet, the truth, when you get into it in the religious field, is when you dig down deep enough and you do comparative religious study and you get the actual documents and you look at the apocryphal texts and you go and you look at all these things collectively, you realize that ultimately all these different things are trying to tell you the same thing. Now, my point is, you can criticize religion, you can criticize, to some extent, someone's sexual orientation, and people are going to get pissed off at you, but the one thing that you absolutely can't touch, the religion of all religions, is this paradigm of money. you can't go after it, because no matter if I'm a Christian, if I'm a Jew, if I'm a straight person or homosexual, if I'm a soccer mom or a martial arts instructor, we all have to bow at this altar of money. And it's linked with our survival instincts, because I need money to get the bread to feed my family, as opposed to just getting the bread to feed my family. That's why I think people are very afraid to let this paradigm go and this attachment to that system, in the same way that they're afraid to let these religious paradigms go and try to evolve their thinking, right?
Now, isn't it ironic that religion has such a massive relationship with money, and yet the only time Jesus ever went to church is to throw the money changers out of it?
Well, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And this is, you know, it's repeated all the time.
He's a man after my own heart, living a life in cruel irony.
But he was also capable of a spiritual level that I think we need to begin to consider. And that is the manifestation of the water into the wine, the multiplication of elements like the fishes and the loaves. See, our consciousness has been, and this is the whole point of everything that I brought up in my earlier rant about this, is it is our consciousness that has been stillborn because of a dependency on materialism at this level. Money is not inherently bad. Materialism is not bad. We need things. We have lost focus on how these things are created, because all things are created out of nothingness. And until we get to the place where we can begin to create out of nothingness, meaning trading values with each other and potentially increasing them, we are not going to be free.
Well said, Randy. And guys, they're going to kick us off here. The music's going to cue on. But I just want to thank you so much.
Thank you, David.
For your contributions.
Thank you, Vinny.
And I would love to hook up with you guys again soon. Folks, join me again next week for another epedition. We're going to do an epedition next week.
It's an like an expedition. An episodic expedition.